Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations. Ante Up, it's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's September 18th, 2020. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long with my cat Draper, who's sitting right here with me. So.
How are we doing this show today? I don't understand. I'm supposed to be retired. You're supposed to be dead. How is this possible?
Sorry, buddy. I couldn't pull through for you yesterday. I know you were hoping that that you'd get the 911 call transcript later on and start spending that insurance money. But
you didn't go the whole way. If you went the full 10,000, I'd have been getting the full whatever it is I'm owed.
I can guarantee you that would have happened. I did this 10,000 calorie one day challenge yesterday to raise money for our library foundation here, and I had a tap out 11 hours into it at 6,888 calories. I ran out of places that were open.
because
the goal of it was to eat at all of our Safety Harbor restaurants.
Yeah.
So I had a videographer following me around. He's going to cut it into a Visit Safety Harbor video. So, I mean, lots of people have done this 10,000 challenge online. That's where I saw it. I do think it's possible. Obviously it's possible. I mean, Michael Phelps did 13,000 calories a day when he was training for the Olympics.
Right.
And, you know, he and I are almost mirror images.
So. Got that swimmer's body. Well, see, there's a difference between his. He's a swimmer. You're a cannonballer. There's a difference.
Oh, man, that's good. I like that. So it's definitely doable. I mean, obviously, I made it more difficult by having to go to insisting on going to restaurants. I had people come up and give me protein bars and stuff, and I'm like, no, I can't eat that. That's not for a restaurant.
So
it was really hard to – it was hilarious that I spent the entire day eating yesterday, and I was out before some of these places were open, and I couldn't make it to them before they closed.
Wow.
It was 11 hours.
That's a long time. You know, your problem was that you should have had a KFC as a local restaurant.
I mapped it out and did the calorie estimation before I even started it, and obviously one of them was our favorite fried chicken place downtown.
Yeah.
And I was going to get, the breast and wing meal and get double mashed potatoes and gravy.
Yeah.
And a good chunk of my calories, right? But about halfway through the challenge, I had to scratch that whole idea off the list. That was not going to happen. Interesting how your body reacts to 7,000 calories.
That's a great story, man.
Did not heave yesterday, did not heave overnight, and I went for my morning walk, so I'm sort of back to normal and drinking my diet soda now. So.
That's a great story, man. You do so much for that city. It's remarkable. And the money you raise, too, is phenomenal. Now they get to have a video, too, that they'll be able to use for, you know, tourists and ads, and it's pretty wild. I did a story on KFC once for the TBT back in the day when you and I first started the show.
Yeah.
And it was one of those bowls, like 3,000 calories for one bowl. And I'm like, damn, Scott, just have one for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and you make 10,000 calories easy.
It is funny, though, how many people that followed me around yesterday or stopped to say hi who had ironclad strategies for me. And that was the way. I'm like, you just had three big meals and you could have done it. And I'm like, yeah, three big meals. Think about that. There's lots of days I have a uni-meal, right? So let's just not assume that because you can write down 10,000 calories on a spreadsheet that it's going to happen.
You know, you used to have weight loss bets. Now you're trying to gain weight. This is scary.
So this is an interesting thing that we were talking about yesterday. What is harder, eating 10,000 calories in a day or limiting yourself to 1,500 calories, which is what I did when I lost all my weight?
Easily. It's easier to me, it's easier to limit than to, because you couldn't do it. You couldn't fit another bite in your mouth yesterday, and you barely got past half.
Yeah, at the end of the night, I changed my opinion on this. Yeah. Early on. And my earlier thought was, like, it's really hard not to eat for me. Not that I'm a huge pig, but when I was losing that weight, I mean, I was using that MyFitnessPal app and logging stuff in, and I had to do my best to save 90 calories a night so I could get one beer. That was difficult. So I'm like, oh, no, 10,000 calories, you just eat and eat and eat and eat. Until you can find out you can't just eat and eat and eat.
Yeah, yeah.
You're 48 years old human being, so.
You should have had, like, a doctor going with you walking around while you...
there were suggestions that I needed that.
That'd have been awesome.
And there was a portion of the day that I'm like, maybe I really should have.
I could have played the role of Jeff Probst and said, let's get medical.
Yeah, yeah.
Scott's breathing heavy and sweating on the bench over there. Let's get medical in here.
Dying on the crash cart, you'll be over there. All right, so, Doc, what's going on? Is he going to be able to get back in the game?
Now, you understand that by saying you're not going to go on and eat another nugget, you're leaving the game. All right, sorry. Let's move on to poker, shall we?
Oh, man, good stuff. All right, Stones Gambling Hall and its tournament director, Justin Kiratis, have settled a lawsuit with more than 60 of the 88 plaintiffs who allege the casino and director were involved in or did not do enough to stop the alleged cheating by Mike Postol on live stream events. The settlement terms were not disclosed, but were described as, quote, nominal, and are clearing the casino and Kiratis of any wrongdoing. Among this week's amazing developments, we got a lot to talk about here, I think.
Okay.
The attorney for the plaintiffs said the casino and Kiratis were extremely forthcoming in providing information throughout the process, and he is confident neither had any role of knowledge in the alleged cheating. He also said some of the plaintiffs who did not agree to the settlement are satisfied with the settlement.
That's bizarre.
Postol made his first public statement on the case, telling the Sacramento Bee in a text message that he has been telling his story to a producer who will soon release a documentary that, quote, won't just shock the poker and gambling world, but the entire world.
Oh, man.
Kiratis released a 4-page statement saying he was advised to remain silent throughout the process. He cooperated fully and expressed the pain he suffered from the, quote, poker community and wannabe celebrity commentators on Twitter, YouTube, who falsely accused me of being a knowing participant. Wow, so where do we even start here?
Wow, this is like... Well, the first thing I want to say is, how are people who didn't settle satisfied?
Well, right? I have to believe, here's what I have to believe. So that obviously the attorney for the plaintiffs is saying, all right, we saw all the information and these guys had nothing to do with it.
Right.
Yeah, we still were able to squeeze a settlement out of them.
Right.
That's what I'm reading in this, right?
So. Right.
And the quote nominal came from Stone's lawyer. So, he also said it was in good faith. So, it had to be a very, very, very small settlement, I'm thinking, financially, right? So, you know, I think some of the, I'm going to guess if that's the case, that some of these 28 who didn't agree to the settlement were kind of like me the other day when I got, and maybe I was wrong because it is half your company, Chris, but mm-hmm. I did get one of those class action lawsuit things in the mail that the Port of San Diego overcharged people for rental cars. And if I filled it out and sent it back in, I would qualify for $3.20. I decided not to, Chris. I will give you the
$1.60
if you'd like me to, but I chucked that right in the recycling because it wasn't worth my time.
No.
Right? So I think that might be the case here, too. I mean, I really don't know what kind of financial settlement you can end up with when the attorney suing you claims that you are completely innocent. Right? So it can't be that big. So I think that's my guess. It's a complete guess, but I'm going to guess that this guy went to somebody and said, hey, you know, I can get you $12. And they're like, no, forget it. I'm happy. We're good. Thanks for the old college try, but I get my own $12, right?
And it feels like, too, some of it was, and just a feeling, but it feels like a lot of it was, we just wanted to call attention to this so that the poker community would know about it and it would get done and attach our names to it because I was in that game, too, and that kind of stuff. And some people
you know,
are like, yeah.
That's a very good point because, you know, if you do a settlement and there's no statement from anyone, then just the way our world works, right, you're going to say, hey, the casino was guilty and they just wanted to pay it off to get done with it, right?
Right.
So going this route... now you got the plaintiff's attorney saying, hey, these guys did nothing wrong, and so they essentially paid the guy a little bit to make that statement. That's kind of the way I'm reading it, right?
Yeah, me too.
And that would be money well spent to get your reputation somewhat back. I mean, obviously, there's going to be people that don't believe this, which is kind of ridiculous when you have the opposing attorney saying that you're good, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So we'll get the Postol here in a minute, but I really do feel really, really, really horrible for this tournament director. And, you know, I know throughout this whole thing, like we always do with these things, our journalistic instinct is to tell people to let the process work out, because once you convict them in the media, they're convicted, right? So, you know, that story hasn't been told completely for Mike Postol yet, but certainly for Justin here, it has. And I can only imagine how horrible that is, just reading anything on the internet, watching these YouTube videos where people saying this guy had to be part of it, and you were advised by your attorney not to say anything because that was going to jeopardize your case. And that went on for, what, a year probably?
Yeah, at least. It seems like at least a year.
Yeah. And that's really, really, really damaging. And I didn't read the entire 4-page statement, but I read enough of it to know I probably agreed with the rest of it. You know, his big thing is, hey, am I going to be welcomed back into the poker world now, or is my poker career over because of this? And that really sucks if you had nothing to do with it. And you've got, again, the plaintiff's attorney saying you had nothing to do with it, right?
Right.
So, when people get upset at us on the show for not immediately convicting folks, that this is a great example of why I'm always loath to do that, even if there appears to be video and evidence that makes it really difficult not to believe that, right?
Yeah, that's their training. That's our, you know, I mean, I realize we're an entertainment show and we're supposed to try to make people laugh and be on their side and all that stuff. But when it comes to stuff like this, you know, that's our training. That's the way we were taught to be journalists and to hear both sides of the story, put yourself in their shoes first before you just totally, and that's what we do. And we just wait, you know, let the process do its job. And clearly this guy didn't do anything wrong. And it's got all of these people on his side now. So hopefully some of the damage can be repaired with him at least.
Yeah, I certainly hope somebody gives him a chance and you don't have any of the internet trolls out there lobbing shots at him. But unfortunately, that's probably what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So.
All right.
Now, Postol, I mean, I'll tell you, after I finished Tiger King, I don't think there's anything I'd ever want to watch again on TV that could top that. But Mike Postol is certainly selling this documentary pretty well, isn't he?
Yeah, these are the statements of famous people in the past, or maybe infamous people in the past. It almost never goes well. I mean, I'm not saying that's not what's going to happen here, but when people talk like this, you know, it's clear that there's some desperation there, and I don't know. I don't know what this producer is going to produce for him, but the entire world, you know what? Yeah, there's 7 billion people on this planet. I think maybe
they're all on pins and needles waiting for this poker documentary.
Maybe 4,000 people care about what's going on in the story, but whatever.
But that being said, so I mean, it is tracing his 17-year career. He said, and again, as I said on the show, I've known the guy. I've had dinner with him, drinks with him. So he is an interesting guy. So I am open again, not that that he's going to somehow prove that he didn't do this, but I'm interested in what he thinks will shock the poker and gambling world. And, you know, you can be shocked. So, you know, I don't know if you watched the it was right before Tiger King, so I almost forgot about it because Tiger King was so much more over the top. But this McMillions docuseries that I think it was on HBO, it was all about the Monopoly game at McDonald's, right?
Yeah.
And how the guy rigged that, and the more you watched it, you're more like, it's impossible for somebody to rig this game. And then you get to those last couple episodes, you're like, wow, that's how he did it? That's amazing! I mean, really, that guy could have cured cancer if he would have put that much effort into curing cancer.
Then. Yeah, yeah.
Stealing the $1 million game piece and giving it to friends and having them pay him under the table, right? So part of me is intrigued that if this documentary somehow can show how he had this, you know, 97% win rate or whatever crazy number it is, and did it legit, right? And yeah. There's still magic out there, right?
Yeah, you never know. I mean, that's got clinging to his journalism as well. So I'm with him there. I'm with you. I'm saying, okay, let's see the video. Let's go to the videotape. Usually those kind of statements are the kind of people that are just absolutely desperate to clear themselves. And we'll see.
Well, you know, hey, here's the funny thing about what you just said, though, right? So, I mean, probably 95% of the poker world is already convinced that Postol did this based on the video evidence that we've seen.
Right.
And we've talked about, so sometimes you don't always see what you're seeing. Imagine if Postol can come up with some kind of video thing that makes it look completely different, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's just possible with video, you know, it's not really what you're saying. I mean, last night I stayed up late watching this Aaron Hernandez stuff, too, and watching the video and having the lawyers argue whether there's a Glock in his hand or an iPad. Right? So it's all about how you sell the video. It just doesn't mean because you have a videotape that you've got proof, right? So
it's true.
I'm super fascinated. I can't wait to see this and have my entire world shocked with.
I wonder how he's going to release it. Is he going to just release it on YouTube? Is he going to release it?
If it is going to shock the entire world, Chris, there's going to be a bidding war between all 98 streaming services that I pay for now that cost me twice as much as cable did back when I had cable.
Just don't put any pictures of twerking children on the poster to sell it. Otherwise, oh, that might tell the world, though. Just it'll shock the world. That'll definitely shock the world.
Hey, that publicity worked for him, right?
I think so. Netflix is going down.
All right, Daniel Negreanu and Chicago pro Connor Drennan had a $100,000 side bet over who would win more events at this year's WSOP.com online series. And heading into the last event, it appeared that no one claimed victory in the bet, as neither had managed to win a gold bracelet. But Drennan had other plans, coming back from two big blinds left at one point to win the 10K Super Millions event and that extra 1K sugar from Negreanu.
I tell you, the show this week is like right out of Hollywood.
Right?
You know, these are all like Hollywood things. Shock the world, and this guy never going to win an event at the last event, coming back from two big blinds, and he wins the bet with Negreanu. That's crazy. Isn't that crazy? I mean, he's basically free-rolling because it's the last event. And Negreanu didn't win an event, so he's like, so there's probably some relaxing there. But that's crazy to win the Super Millions and then another 100K from him on the last event. It's like this stuff, you can't make this stuff up.
Amazing. I mean, can you? I just can't even imagine that you get to the last event and you think you're, woo, I didn't win the 100K, but I'm also not on the hook for it. And then the very last event. And then, I mean, it was fun watching Negreanu kind of rail this guy at the end, you know, watching him and kind of cheering him on. I mean, you kind of wanted to cheer that on. I mean, not that I'd want to lose $100,000 to you, my friend, but if you were sitting there with two big blinds at the final table, the final tournament, I think in your mind, you know, that's a good story. If you can come back and win that.
Right? I don't want to pay $100,000 for it, but yeah.
$100,000, good story. It's a good story. So.
Hey, I got a story about Will Hopper. You want to pay me $100,000 for it, I'll tell it to you.
Well, again, I mean, it just shows you why poker is so much fun for us, right? Because anything can happen. I mean, literally, I mean, we laugh about the chip in the chair kind of thing, but this is pretty much a chip in the chair.
Yeah, insane.
Two big blinds with an extra $100,000 on top of the huge prize he got. I don't even know what the top prize was for this, but it was significant. So
you know, you can imagine too, like, how many times he thought, let's make a deal so I can win the title for free, you know? Because I'm assuming that if he wins a title in a chop, he still wins the title, right? Negreanu still has to pay him.
I would think so, yeah. You know? Or whether this deal, I mean, usually these bets ended with, buyouts, right?
Right.
I mean, I wonder if there was a discussion at some point with two big blinds. I mean, if I had two big blinds at that point, I mean, what's your strategy, right?
I take my buy-in back and run.
Is your strategy to settle and get whatever you can out of it? Because the chances of you actually coming back from two big blinds from the final table is so remote that you'll take whatever you can get out of it. Or do you just say, hey, I got two big blinds, I'm going to shove it in and hope for the best and get my $100,000 if I get it. So I would think you would be in the you would be inclined to take whatever kind of deal Negreanu was willing to give you, right?
It's funny, though. I would be if it meant that I could lose money. But since he was free-rolling, I don't know if I would. I'd be like, hey, screw it. I got a free chance at $100,000 here. If he doesn't give me anything, I don't lose anything either. I didn't have any money. It's not like I have to pay him money if I lose this bet. So to me, I would be like, no, I think I'd let it ride, I, which is not the gambling person I am. But in this case, it's a free roll.
Yeah.
I think I'd let it go. I'd say, screw it. And this guy did it, obviously. Man, pretty crazy.
Phenomenally crazy, right?
Yeah, so, I'm happy.
weird world we live in. All right, here's this week update on casinos and poker room reopenings and closings. And Florida Magic City Casino has reopened its poker room. In Michigan, Motor City Casino announced that it was reopening its poker room this week, but backtracked after concerns from the Michigan Gaming Control Board. In Nevada, Westgate Las Vegas has reopened its poker room. And in Colorado, Ameristar Blackhawk, Golden Gates Casino, and Isle Blackhawk have all reopened their poker rooms. ntfmagazine.com/reopen lists verify details on casino and poker room reopenings and reclosings. If you have any updates, email us at editor@ntfmagazine.com. And plenty of you have been doing that recently. Really, thank you.
Yes, yes.
Hard to keep track of all this stuff. And we are also emailing a weekly e-blast with updates that you can subscribe to on the homepage of ntfmagazine.com.
It's a little theme in the openings and closings today. There's Magic City, Motor City, and then there's Westgate and Golden Gates. It's like all at the same time.
Gates, yeah. it'll be interesting to watch this Michigan thing. So I haven't read all the articles yet because that happened when I was almost dying yesterday. But they had Motor City kind of really shocked the world in sending out an e-blast last week saying that they're going to be reopening next week. And then there was an article a couple days ago where the Gaming Control Board was like, what? Huh? Who? They can't do that until we give them permission to. And then, so that's what sounded like it happened, is they decided to, I think they were told to decide.
Yeah.
To hold off for a little bit. So it was interesting, though, because I think those Michigan casinos, or Detroit casinos specifically, I mean, I think they were like at 25% capacity or even less, right?
So. Yeah.
At that point, I mean, I was telling other folks even before all this, and I'm like, when you're at that kind of capacity, you're not going to allow people to sit at a Texas Hold'em table. You know, you want that 25% of capacity all at slot machines. That's right. Where you're going to play. So,
right.
So the fact that they said they wanted to open up is fantastical. Fantastical?
That's a word.
Wow. It is probably a word, right?
It's a word.
It was fantastic. But it also didn't seem like it made much sense. So we'll see what happens with that, though.
Sounds like Apostle's producer wrote that press release. It's going to shock the world.
Shock the entire world.
Annie updates. Papes, the Annie Up fans' free online tournament series on PokerStars Play Money site, is available everywhere. Details on how you can join can be found at bit.ly/PAIPS. I wonder if the folks at home who listen every week kind of just like say these little announcements with me as we
they
go along.
As they go to sleep every night, yep.
I need to rewrite it a little bit or something. I don't know. Games are on the 6th, 16th, and 26th every month. Rotate disciplines with the main tournament followed by a second chance event. PokerStars lets you claim 15,000 free chips every 4 hours. Join the Annie Up Fans group Facebook page and post within the group to get feedback on hands, ask Cole the 4 questions, or just discuss anything poker. Check out our 11 vintage Annie Up logo designs on merchandise at annieupmagazine.com/shop to buy t-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, phone and laptop cases, coffee and drink mugs, and more with your choice of Annie Up Magazine, Annie Up PokerCast, or Annie Up Poker Tour logos. If you have a hand of the week, listener spotlight, or call the floor submission, email us at podcast@annieupmagazine.com or post in the Annie Up Fans group on Facebook. We have a new O'Malley's move. Here it comes.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we're playing $2, $5 No Limit Hold'em at our regular casino cash game. The action has been pretty predictable, with one major difference. There is a lot of limping in this game. We've been at the table for roughly 3 hours and sit with about 600 up 100. The blinds post, it's folded to an MP who limps. The hijack folds, and we're in the cutoff with the jack of diamonds, nine of diamonds. This is a decent hand, and we could have position if the button folds. We think about raising briefly, but ultimately decide to limp. The button limps, the small blind completes, and the big blind checks. 5 players and $25 in the pot, and the flop is the queen of spades, queen of diamonds, 10 of hearts. This isn't a bad flop for our hand. We have an open-ended straight draw and a backdoor flush draw. It's checked to us, and we decide to make a bet into the pot. We make it $20 to go. The button and small blind fold, but the big blind calls. The big blind has been a fairly standard player, hasn't got too far out of line in many scenarios, but has been getting hit in the head with the deck. He bought in for 300 and currently has 900. The MP folds. There's now $65 in the pot, and the turn is the king of diamonds. The big blind once again checks. I really like our hand, and don't want to lose any streets of value here, especially if our opponent has a queen. We make it $40 to go, a bet that a lot of lesser hands could call. Our opponent thinks briefly before making the call. It was almost like he was weighing all options. There's 145 in the pot, and the river is the six of hearts. The big blind thinks briefly before sliding $100 into the pot. So, the big blind wakes up at a peculiar time. We've put $65 of our 600 stack into the pot. We have 535 left. What's the move?
It's time for the AdvancedPokerTraining.com Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations, a podcast at AntiUpMagazine.com. If you haven't won something from us in the past year, you get a free membership to Advanced Poker Training, the world's number one poker training site. As we promised last week, Jonathan Ottenbacher sent us in two hands, and we did the first one last week, which was quite interesting, I thought.
Yeah.
I played it. And so we've got a second one that, no pressure, Jonathan, but we're hoping it's also quite interesting.
And the sequels never lead, live up to the originals. So
no, they don't. Right. No. Godfather 2.
Godfather 2. Maybe I think Crocodile Dundee 2 is probably the best sequel to an original. But
This might be a little bit blasphemy, but I tend to prefer watching Die Hard 2 to the original.
Huh.
I won't go so far to say it's better because the original was fantastic.
You just prefer to watch it.
But you know, when I'm flipping channels, if it's Die Hard or Die Hard 2, I'm going to watch Die Hard 2 all the time. So
wow, I watched Die Hard 1 in the theater 17 times that summer.
It's a great movie.
Yeah, I had a friend who was a manager at the local thing, and he saw me in line. He's like, "What are you doing standing in line? Come on in." I'm like, "No way." He said, "Yeah, anytime you come back, you see for free." So I went back 16 more times. Saw for free.
So how many times did you see Die Hard 2 in the theater?
Yeah, twice.
Okay, because your friend wasn't working
there. Yeah, he wasn't. By then, it was over.
All right, well, let's see if this is a Die Hard 2 or a Godfather 2 or a Bad Boys 2.
All right.
Or Grease 2. That was horrible.
Oh, that was bad.
Yeah. All right, we are now... I think last week the first hand was from a two-table online tournament, so this is also in that same tournament. And we're down to the final three, Chris. So three people left.
Okay.
And I don't think we ever heard how many people cashed, but I think last week we kind of talked about 3 to 5 cashing, right? So I'm going to assume that we are in the money already. Could be wrong on that, but...
Okay.
Let's see. Blinds are 1250 and 2500 with a 400 ante. And our hero, Jonathan, is by far the big stack with 220,000 chips, which equates to 88 big blinds.
Mm.
Small blind has 70,000 chips, or 28 big blinds, and the big blind has 60,000 in chips, or 24 big blinds. So, yeah, definitely a commanding lead here.
Yeah.
So, and even if the two blinds knock each other out, it's still a commanding lead, right?
Right.
Pretty interesting. All right, we are on the button, and of course that means we're first to act three-handed with the King of Spades, King of Clubs. So what are we doing with all this information we have now?
Well, in this case, you definitely are raising, because you're raising with any two cards anyway when you have that kind of a lead, three-handed, on the button. You're basically just raising and stealing the blinds and moving on or whatever. But, you know... I would do it because, yeah, okay, so some people might say, oh, but if you raise, you might do what you normally do and just steal the blinds, and then you got like a value for this hand. But at the same time, I would say, if you raise and they think you're just playing back at you, they may now re-raise you with any random hand just to think because, oh, I'm just going to let him run over me, and now you've got a real hand, so you've got some extra money out of it. So I feel like I'm going to raise with it. I don't want to get too cute with it because you're just letting these guys get right back in the tournament with a free flop. So I'll raise to whatever the standard is. I mean, I don't know, 5,500 maybe, something like that, 6,000?
Probably, yeah, six and seven maybe somewhere in there. Okay. Probably what I would normally raise here.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely. I mean, there's no reason not to play the way you normally would. This is kind of what you want in this situation when you're doing exactly what Chris said you should be doing, which is raising every single time on the button with any hand in this position, right? So there's no reason not to do that now, because then hopefully you get somebody to play back at you because they think you're not as strong as we really are. So absolutely have to raise and do the normal stuff. So, all right, our hero does raise. It's a min raise, though, to 5,000. Mm. Small blind, 3 bets to 10,000, and the big blind calls, Chris.
Now I shove. it's easy now. Now I shove because, one, these guys don't have that much in front of them anyway. If somebody has the idea that they're three betting, well, maybe they're three betting because of what I said earlier. They think we're just doing our standard button steal and take it stuff because of the big, you know, we're the big stack. But anybody who's willing to three bet us, but to min raise us after we basically min raise the blinds, I think they want to get involved in a hand, and I'm happy to do that with King King. Also, I want to knock out the other person. I don't want them all going there for a pittance of 10 grand when, you know, they can now outflop me. I want to at least narrow it down to one player, so I'll gladly shove here.
Yeah, I think, because really you were down to, I see the small blind after their bet, that's four big blinds, so they're down to 24 big blinds. The big blind now is down to 20 big blinds. So, again, I mean, they got some room there, but, I mean, you can put some pressure on them to get them to fold here and pick up some more money. That's not a bad solution here. We do have kings, obviously, so we do want somebody to call, but we don't want both call, as you mentioned, right? So, at this point, I mean, I don't know what other kind of raise you can make that would make any kind of sense other than shoving. It just seems silly not to just go ahead and shove, right?
Right, right.
All right, well, our hero, four bets to 30,000. The small blind calls and the big blind folds. So we did succeed in getting heads up. Did not get all our money in quite yet. So that's
bizarre, too, don't you think? I mean, first of all, the small blind three bets us. Then we four bet, and he just calls 30,000 when he only started with 70.
Yeah, 70.
So,
yeah.
I mean, that's like half a stack, basically. How do you not just shove there? This is the end of the tournament. It's three-handed. You might as well, what if you don't, you know, you're trying to hit the flop. What if you don't hit the flop? Now you've wasted half your stack, and you're clearly the short stack after that. If you had a good enough hand to three-bet us, you had a good enough hand to shove on us, I would think, and three-handed. So that's kind of a bizarre move right there.
Yeah, I think if your hand is big enough to three-bet and then strong enough to call here, those two things together for me are pretty important. I think you just shove and get it in here right now. So think about this, too. I mean, if they do that and that small blind hand holds up, now we're almost tied with the chip lead because you've taken 70,000 away from our hero, John Devane. It gets him down to 150, and then we've picked up – actually, no, we get more than that because of what we already had.
Right.
We get his 70,140 plus what's already in the pot. So actually, you can take the chip lead here.
Yeah. Yep.
Which is pretty powerful in this situation because you don't want to be continually battling the other big blind with this big kahuna there. So if you can become a one of the big kahunas and then now puts a lot more pressure on the big blind to get to get it in, and one of you can knock him out, and it doesn't matter really who at that point, and then you've got a pretty good heads-up battle, right? So So unless the small blind are really getting crazy with a weak hand, which is unfortunate if that's what's going on, I don't see why you don't shove right there.
Yeah.
All right, the pot is 71,200, and the flop is the ace of diamonds, jack of spades, eight of diamonds. And our opponent dunk shoves for 40,000.
Yeah, that's gross. Now, I mean, clearly, this person knows that we can't fold. So, he must have an ace. I mean, one thing if he, you know, if he had enough, that would make us think he had an ace. Also, he's not afraid of us having an ace, which we could have easily done. All the things we had just done in this hand with ace-king,
right. Yep.
He doesn't care. So, this guy clearly has a hand that hit that ace. If he didn't hit that ace, there's no unless he has two diamonds. But if he had two diamonds, and they couldn't be the ace of diamonds, so what possibly could he be doing is three betting and calling four bettings with, you know, that has two diamonds in his hand. So it's pretty obvious he has some sort of ace, and he's hoping to now double through us. So I don't think I can fold, and it sucks, but the ace is there. You know, King King's an ace magnet.
I think this does is interesting that he shoved on us with an ace here, right? Because he's got to assume that we're going to put them all in, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think you take a chance here in betting here and getting us to fold if we don't have an ace, which we just discussed pre-flop when we were discussing it, that it seemed pretty clear.
You know what, too? I think you're right. And I think maybe I can fold here. I don't, you know, I mean, I think I maybe I can fold here. Pre-flop, I couldn't have at all. but maybe I can for 40,000. Is that what it was? Yeah, 40,000. Yeah. So maybe I can fold for 40,000.
Really? I mean, if he does have an ace, and it seems likely he does, that we're down to a two outer because we don't have, you know, no runner runner flush possible.
There's no runner runner. Queen 10 is the only runner runner that gives us a straight.
Yeah, so really, we're calling off 40,000 for a two outer. I mean, obviously, if we get it, we're going to win this tournament pretty much, probably, because we're going to be massive, and our last opponent is going to have 20 big blinds left, and we're going to have all the rest of them. So, but that seems like a lot here. So, I mean, again, this is one of the reasons you get it all in pre-flop, because then you're forced to see the end and see how it plays out, right? But now we're not forced to, so we have an option here. We have an option of realizing that we don't have an ace, and if we're up against one, which is very possible, that we have a very slim possibility of winning this hand. So, yeah. So I guess that's what I'm saying, though. I mean, part of that, if you think of it in reverse, now makes me wanna call, because why would this guy not assume that we're going to shove on him?
Yeah. Interesting. Although, yeah. I don't know. Because, you know, he could have been like, oh, this guy might check it down with me now because he's scared of the ace and he has queen-queen. You know, I don't know. He might think that I'm just trying to steal it if I do this. So sometimes people, you know, you don't know what's running through their heads. You know, he might think, oh, this guy thinks I'm bluffing. I'm just shoving on any flop to get him to fold. And 40,000 into a 70-something thousand pot is pretty decent-sized bet. I could fold for that, I think, now that I'm down to 190. That would bring me down to 150. I don't know, maybe not. I'm probably still calling. In the moment, I'm probably still calling. If it's something like, you know, we have all this time to think about it, maybe I could talk myself into a fold, because I still have 150 at the end of the day if I fold. If I don't, I mean, if I fold, I have 190. But if I call, I still have 150. This guy would have, 70, 140. So we'd be basically even with one guy left, so we'll knock that guy out and take my chances heads up against this guy. I am chip leader, so I've played pretty well. If I fold, I have 190. This guy now goes from 70 to 100, and so he catches up to us almost anyway. You know what I mean? He's only like one decent pot away from catching the lead again anyway. So I don't know. I can go either way on this, I think.
Yeah, so, I mean, boy, and this is what's tough about online, because you don't have the time to really think about this, right? So, I mean, my initial knee-jerk would be to fold, because I don't have an ace, and it seems very clear that this has an ace. But then you think about it, and I'm like, why would he bet if he had an ace here? Because really, I mean, if you had an ace here and you checked, assuming he was going to put us all in, our hero was going to put us all in, and he didn't, you had the same play on the turn, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're still going to get that money in. I mean, obviously, at that point, it's really going to look like you have an ace and the guy's going to fold. But, you know, I would rather take that chance that he's going to put us in and get that money than, because, I mean, why would we not bet here, right?
Yeah. Yeah, because we took the lead.
We took the lead in this whole thing. We got to represent that he has the ace and hope that we're up against queens or something like that, right?
This is why I would have shoved preflop. I think that this is the type of thing that, you know, of course, we could have still ended up losing because the guy could have an ace here, but it just feels like that when you're playing poker, you try to make the most good decisions that you can and avoid the bad decisions, or avoid having to be put in position to make bad decisions. So in this case, I felt like, you know, preflop, if you can get it all in now and either take that decent sized pot already, which cripples the other guy, then you would. And then if you got it all in, then you end up losing to the guy. Well, then, hey, you made the right decision at the time. Now you're put to a test again when you didn't have to be. Now, again, this is online, so it doesn't mean that if the guy hit the ace now on this flop, he would have hit the ace when you shoved earlier, because it's all random generated, a timely thing. You don't know what would have come. So you can't be that. We can't use your hindsight there and say, oh, see, I would have lost anyway. No, that's not true. So I think the right move is to have shoved preflop. And now I really feel like, if I call, we're even, but I have a third player in this tournament. So I don't know. I feel like I'm a better player than this guy, and I'm going to wear him down. Then maybe I do.
We'll be able to get this money back. So that's why I don't think I want to put this 40,000 in. I mean, we gave him 70,000. We obviously been outplaying. Let's not get outplayed here. Yeah. Kind of what I'm thinking. So, and if I'm wrong, you know, if the guy shows queens, then, you know, hey, that's all right. I mean, it's still, we still have the chip lead here by a little bit. We got a player we can knock out, and you know, I'm not worried about that, I don't think. So, right.
Well, I feel like he has an ace, and I'm going to fold. I feel like it's an ace. It just does.
All right, our hero types. I have King King Frowny Face into the chat box, hoping it will convince the small blind to show his hand, and I fold. Small blind wins the pot. Pot types no good and shows the ace of hearts, 10 of diamonds.
Wow.
After I folded, I had 190,000. The small blind had 110,000. The big blind had 50,000. If I would have called and lost, we would have been nearly even, around 140,000 chips each. If I would have called and won, I would have knocked him out and had a massive stack against the other player. How much should those results play into my decision? Well, I think they play into the decision quite a bit. I mean, it's one of our discussions here, right?
Yeah, so, yeah.
We still had a pretty big lead by folding there, and it turns out it was the right move. I mean, obviously, we didn't get to see the turn of river to see whether we spiked our two out or right. But
right.
But as played, you know, we still have a significant lead, and, you know, if we can knock that big blind out, then we'll have a 2-1 chip lead over the other player. And if the our other player knocks out the big blind, we still have a chip lead on him, right? So both of those scenarios are very good for us. So, and had we gone the other route, then that math would have been very different. And really, this is one of the reasons I really like playing Sit and Goes back in the day, was because it gets down to this point where a lot of these decisions are math-based and not card-based, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you want to have the chip lead when you can, and you want to put pressure on players when you can. And so a lot of it just becomes analyzing the various chip stacks rather than your cards here. So that was my big determination in wanting to fold here. So I continued to have the chip lead here. So
let's take a look for a minute now at this ace 10 play preflop. We are on the button. We do our little min raise. He 3-bets us, which I don't disagree with. If he wants to just 3-bet,
that's right. That's why we said we should raise with the kings, right? Because at least somebody will play back at us. Yep.
So he 3-bets with the ace 10. Now we get another guy calling. Now when we 4-bet. Let me ask you, you're the short stack ninja. How do you not shove there on the guy now with ace 10?
Shove or fold. I don't think you can call.
Right. Yeah. Or fold. How do you call that, hoping to have to hit your ace, and what he's thinking is maybe hit my 10, it's good. But now you're basically going to the flop, and we know you miss 2 out of every 3 flops, and even if you hit the 10, it might not be good. Even if the ace, it might not be good.
Ace, it might not be good. That's right. What I'd be worried about at that point. I mean, obviously, we're talking about a pretty wide range of raising for our hero here, but you got to put an ace in that range, right? So, you know, if an ace is in that range, you got ace, jack, ace, queen, ace, king that are all better than your ace 10.
And it's bizarre to me that he min raises with ace 10 preflop. Like, what is with this min raising stuff? I don't understand.
Actually, he technically didn't min raise. He doubled our bet, but the min raise would have been another 20.
Well, okay, but you know what I mean. Everyone thinks of it as a min raise because he doubles the bet, which is, you know, if you double the big blind, it's a min raise. So people think of it as.
I guess, I mean, again, it's hard to. I'm not necessarily defending, but I can see here's the problem that player is in. Yeah, you're out of position. You definitely don't want the big blind to come along, right? And you kind of think the button is raising with any two cards. But you probably don't want to get committed to this hand. So that's what's interesting about the call on the 30,000 is, I mean, you don't want to get committed to this hand. So the 10,000 is a good enough bet, in my opinion, to get the big blind to fold. And then when we get this big bet back to us, I think it's enough that I can lay it down and wait for a better spot.
I don't know. First of all, I think, like you said, you're in a small blind, so you know you're going to be out of position. So why are you giving somebody the perfect odds to call to keep you out of position the rest of the hand? Why wouldn't you have made a bigger bet to take it down, take that free 5,000 plus the small blind or big blinds bet, and say, hey, okay, now I've built my stack up from 70, now I'm almost 80, and I didn't even have to see a flop, and now I'm the button. It's like, instead of, you know, and that, he doesn't know we have King-King. He doesn't know he's going to 3-bet us.
Right.
But, you know, how does he not make it at least 15 or 20, you know, at that point, or even just shove, to be honest with you? I just don't get it. But whatever. I mean, clearly it worked out for him.
Interesting chip situation we're in here, right? So, I mean, this is one of the reasons I've been talking on the show for a long time about starting to be concerned with your chip stack when you're at 20 big blinds rather than the 10 big blinds, which is what we all learned about before, right? So that doesn't mean you shove at that point, but that's when you start thinking. So this player was at 28 big blinds. So that's, you're not to that situation yet. You feel like you have some play left. So it's difficult, I think, in my mind there, to shove with ace 10. So really, I think more, it's, I mean, do you, again, if you're playing math here, you might just want to fold this, which sounds kind of weak. But wait till you have that ace 10 in position, and then you get a better spot of this, right? So, but so when you kind of like tiptoe into this hand by raising, you know, I mean, is it really a hand that's worth 28 big blinds?
I don't know, three-handed. I mean, those blinds are going to eaten up pretty quick with an ante.
Yeah.
You know, three-handed. I feel like I'm letting it go with it. I'm letting it fly. I mean, not folding. Yeah. I mean, I'm saying, hey, you know what? We're three-handed. There's no way I'm going to win this tournament unless I double up somehow. This guy's willing to put in some extra money here. He can be doing it with anything. No one ever puts him on king-king there. You put him on any random two cards, and so you're like, okay, let's get some more money in the middle here, and if I take it down now, I'll move up to 80, 85,000, you know, and then I'm buttoned, and now I can control and maybe do another raise and take it. Now I'm up to 90,000, and then boom, I double through him, and I'm the tournament leader. So to me, that 10,000 raise was the first mistake. I felt like it needed to be more. Or you call. Because now you call 5,000. It's not that big a deal, and you're surprising everyone with this hand. You're playing differently against what normal norms are. So in this case, you just call the 5 grand. The big blind will probably call the 5 grand. And then you're like, okay, we've got 15 in the middle. I've got an ace. Ace flops. I check it. The other guy checks it, goes to this guy who's supposed to be representing it. He bets, you call, the other guy folds. Now you've gotten way more money out of this than raising it to 15 and folding. So I think there's a lot of mistakes here made by the small blind.
Yeah.
And donk bet, obviously, was it the small blind or the big blind? Small blind.
Small blind.
Yeah, okay. So I believe that's the big deal there, is that the blind just didn't really play this hand effectively. He probably could have gotten so much more out of this had he even – I mean, I guess – he could have, like you said, he was hoping maybe the min raise. I was thinking he was hoping that by min raising that we would four bet and then he would shove on us and get value for the hand for having ace 10 three handed, you know, and it didn't work out that way. He just called. That's another mistake he made. That call is a huge mistake to me.
Well, and I'll tell you, this is one of the things, and one of the more reasons I like playing sit and goes is because you get much more experience playing shorthanded in sit and goes. So you start to think about these kind of situations better, and you are in a frame of mind where you can make these decisions and know what you need to look for and how to play them. Because, again, if you play multi-table tournaments, I mean, your shorthanded game does not happen very often, right? You don't make that many final tables. And the way things are now, at least they used to be before COVID, I mean, it'd be all kinds of chop discussions and that kind of stuff, right? So you don't get a lot of experience playing this, and I think this is a situation where if you had more experience in this shorthanded, three-handed game at the end, you in your mind would already be looking at the chip stacks and have a plan of attack for what I get in different spots and what I'm doing. If I'm raising here, am I calling, am I shoving? And then it becomes a little bit easier to play that way. But it's clear that this guy did not have the experience. Did not understand before he looked at his cards what he would do with an ace 10 and the small blind in this kind of situation, right?
So. Well,
so hopefully he's playing more of these online and getting more experience.
The thing that I would like to say, too, is if this was a live tournament and not online, if he had shoved preflop, he would have gotten called by king-king, he would have hit the ace, and he would have doubled up.
Yep.
So, you know what I mean? Now, because it's online, you can't guarantee he's going to hit the ace, but because it's, you know, if an ace had come in a live tournament, it would have come no matter what he did. So, to me, it's like, wow, I think if you're in a live tournament, you know, and you can look across the table at the other guy, and you can tell you're going to get a call, and you have ace 10, I'm happy to get someone to call me shoving ace 10 three-handed at the end of a tournament. You know, I just am. Ace 10 is a, you know, it's the Cosenza for a reason. I mean, that's a powerful hand three-handed. I see tournaments end one way or the other. People always would call with an ace 10 if somebody shoved all in on them, you know, so they would shove all. And I mean, so to me, I just felt like this guy just didn't play it right at all. And if he played it better, he could have doubled through our guy. Instead, he only got a paltry, you know, 30,000 or whatever it was. Now, I don't know, did Jonathan ever tell us, did he win the tournament?
No, he actually didn't say, so, and we don't have another email, so we, maybe in the, respond, no, he didn't, so. Yeah.
All right, so, hey, Jonathan, let us know how you did. I want to know if you won that or not, and thanks for actually filling in the hand of the week for the last 2 weeks. Much appreciated. Yeah. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at a table.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@anteupmagazine.com. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@anteupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.